Let's slide to the next case. That's number six. Case number six. United States versus Terrence Washington.
My name is Carl Figala. I'm the attorney for Terrence Washington. I'm from Danville, Illinois. One thing I feel I need to address with the court is something that came to light this past Monday at 5 o'clock. I received a phone call from Mr. Washington. Mr. Washington, as you're aware, is incarcerated. He told me that he had sent a certified mailing to my office, but also to the court here, also to Mr. Bass, saying that he himself wanted to tender his own reply brief also. I haven't received that. I don't know if Mr. Bass has either or the court. And he asked that I ask for a continuance so that that too could be considered by the court. I explained to him that I had doubt that the court would necessarily agree with the continuance, but I feel I need to bring that up. I assume the court would want me to proceed with argument on our brief.
Yes, please.
In this particular case, I think the facts are fairly clear, and they're somewhat important because we have a basic traffic stop. A basic traffic stop where Mr. Washington was the driver and Mr. Brewer, co-defendant, was passenger, and out of a basic traffic stop, Mr. Brewer, who was sitting on the passenger side, dumped a package of cocaine out the window. Very simply put, it was a traffic stop just based upon that simple probable cause. We then went to court. There was a plea. The plea to possession with the intent to deliver. His exposure, it was assumed at that point, just based on the underlying offense, was about a level 26, 27. And then, because he did plead guilty, the exposure
was how many months? 26 or 27.
I don't know right off. I don't have that right in front of me. But in any event, the exposure that he then ended up because of the relevant conduct that was brought into play increased this to the level 38, which gave the massive exposure and sentence that he was then given. The concern that we have in this particular case is that the court, in its opinion, which we've appended to our brief, never gave any specifics, never gave any details, just essentially came to the conclusion that the government had met its burden of proof. There are no specifics given. There's no reference to the pre-sentence investigation as to what within that document, too, would justify taking anything from that pre-sentence investigation as being more credible than Mr. Washington. Mr. Washington also then lost out on the acceptance of responsibility because based upon the court's ruling, that all the relevant conduct was shown by the preponderance of the evidence. But based upon that, he then said, Mr. Washington, you're not credible. You're not believable. You're actually lying, obstructing justice. And so he lost. He lost that acceptance of responsibility reduction. But it's based on a faulty premise to begin with. Because the government only presented four witnesses. Four live witnesses that we could cross-examine. Three, as the court knows, were one was a co-defendant, two others were involved in their own criminal activity, and then we have the state policeman who actually did the arrest. All the other witnesses, testimony, if we can call it that, was presented through the pre-sentence investigation. Now, with respect to the pre-sentence investigation, the problem that we have with that is that there's references to all different people talking about all different times, and they even go back to 1995 where there's references to supposedly Mr. Washington going with this person or that person up to Chicago or different places to get cocaine or other substances that were illegal. Now, the same individual in trying to determine how much quantity are they talking about, they say, well, it could have been one to two times a week. It could have been three or four times a week. There's a very unclear understanding as to how many times we're actually talking about, but then the government in the investigation just multiplied. Take taking that as gospel and multiplying that out as far as the total amount that would then be held responsible against Mr. Washington. Now, if we're talking about even a standard of probable cause, there has to be some basis there to point to that as being accurate. And here we just have almost these rough estimates being thrown out, but looking very official in the pre-sentence investigation, and then the court has just carte blanche accepting that. Because as this court will know, Judge McCuskey went back and just accepted the pre-sentence investigation quantity as the proper amount that gave up at level 38. Noting, however, that far exceeded what is the threshold for level 38, but still not giving any explicit detail as to how he could accept any of that amount. Much of his opinion pertained to Mr. Washington's gambling habits, how Mr. Washington obtained money by his testimony, but it really all of a sudden shifted, as the court sees in the opinion, to all of a sudden saying, well, all right, now you're responsible for everything in the pre-sentence investigation. You're not credible, so we accept what's in that pre-sentence investigation. I could understand this to an extent if the court did give the specifics, the details that this court has required in the past, but there are none. The record is just void of anything of that. I could accept this, too, if this was simply an issue of credibility.
Wouldn't the court find that there is no showing of remorse or contrition at all about the life, the span, the entire period of the pre-sentence report?
Judge, he did say that.
Somebody who continues to involve himself in crime for the entire period.
If we accept the fact that the relevant conduct is accurate, but talking about just not having remorse, Judge McCuskey did reference that as one of the factors.
He doesn't dispute that, that the sentencing judge's conclusion as to his lack of remorse and contrition. Does he dispute it now?
We aren't saying that we dispute that if we're talking about what's in the record.
Yes.
I can't say that we are because it's not in the record, Judge. But what I need to point out is that was only one of the multiple factors that Judge McCuskey relied upon. And all of those are hinged upon the relevant conduct, acceptance of what was in the
judgment. Do you think he accepted responsibility when he refused to admit that he sold crack cocaine and disputed all of the calculations of the relevant amounts?
Judge, he did accept responsibility to the extent that he pled guilty to what was involved in the traffic stop, 1,007 grams of powder. He also, Judge, as you know in the record, accepted responsibility for selling powder. But where the line was drawn is where he said he did not sell crack cocaine.
The court found him guilty of what thing, too, didn't it? Perjury?
No, there was no guilty finding of perjury.
So give me a brief further. As he's giving perjurious testimony?
Well, the judge thought he had, but that's...
Well, that's what I said.
Okay, he wasn't convicted of that, Judge, is all I'm trying to say.
I didn't say that.
All right.
But I said he referred to it as giving perjurious testimony.
Judge, that would be accurate. However, you can only reach that point, Judge, if you accept the fact that the relevant conduct in a pre-sentence investigation that was not subject to oath, that was conducted by a probation officer reporting what a police officer said other people said, you can only accept that as being perjurious if you accept that level.
So
of
it has to be more credible testimony of Brewer, Cole, and Select, as well as the cell phone and motel logs.
Well, that would go to three witnesses, Judge, but it doesn't go to the full amount.
It doesn't go to all of them, but
right.
It does to a
certain extent.
A large amount.
But if we go with that, Judge, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal. That would go to a certain level.
Do you want to reserve it right now?
Not yet. It would go to a certain level.
At 1 minute.
I understand. It would go to a certain level, accepting the fact that the judge can weigh the credibility. But why does the probation officer get elevated to that level also? I would like to reserve the rest for rebuttal, Judge.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Timothy Bass on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, this case is simply an example of the district court's application of overwhelming evidence to well-established guidelines. Those guidelines being relevant conduct guideline and the acceptance of responsibility guideline. This court and every other court to address it has said the relevant conduct guideline is mandatory. There is no discretion on the part of the district court, and certainly no discretion on the part of the government to withhold evidence relevant to the district court's determination of sentencing. Putting aside the information in the pre-sentence report, which itself was proper before the district court because the guidelines specifically provide that hearsay evidence is admissible as long as it's reliable. The sworn testimony presented at sentencing by Mr. Lovelace, Mr. Cole, and Mr. Brewer, and Mr. Stolich, as the district court found, quote, clearly, close quote, established a drug quantity with a marijuana equivalent of an offense level of 38. In fact, if you look at the pre-sentence report and you cut the drug quantity in half, you just said cut it in half, we're still over an offense level of 38. And again, if you look solely at the sworn testimony, Mr. Cole, Mr. Lovelace, and Mr. Brewer testified that for a continuous period from early 2000 until May 2002, over a 24-month period, this defendant was traveling to Chicago at least once and as much as four times per month, obtaining a kilogram of cocaine and bringing it back to Decatur to convert it to crack and distribute it. The very thing that he was caught in the act of doing for the offense for which he was charged, being in possession of a kilogram of cocaine. Mr. Cole testified, Mr. Brewer testified, or Mr. Lovelace testified, that at least 4.5 ounces of every kilogram of cocaine this defendant converted to crack. Each of these witnesses corroborated one another. They described, in particular, they described an incident involving the defendant cutting his hand and being taken to the hospital while he was cooking as much as 18 ounces of crack. The district court found that their testimony was credible. This is nothing unusual of a fact finder, in this case the judge, reviewing the evidence, in this case sworn testimony, and making credibility findings. In this case, he found that the credibility of the defendant was the worst in the case. But it was more than the sworn testimony. There were phone records showing 684 phone calls between the defendant and Mr. Cole. There was motel records showing that the defendant stayed in Chicago as much as 10 times during this time period, and Mr. Brewer stayed in Decatur as much as 16 times. There was also a search warrant at Cynthia Clark's or Latanya Fuller's residence, one of the girlfriends of Mr. Brewer, Mr. Lovelace, in which all three of these defendants were found at the scene or arrived at the scene, and during the course of the search there was items associated with cocaine and crack cocaine trafficking. That's overwhelming evidence, and certainly evidence upon which the district court can make a finding, which is such a finding that this court has said virtually can never be clear error. Now, with respect to the acceptance of responsibility issue, again, this case is an example of if you're faced with overwhelming evidence of what you did, don't falsely deny it and don't frivolously contest it, and certainly don't get up on the stand under oath and lie to the court about it. And that's what Mr. Washington did. That's what the district court found. And this court has said in the Taliaferri case, which is cited in our brief, that this court has long held that frivolously contesting and falsely denying relevant conduct is precisely the kind of conduct that is inconsistent with acceptance of responsibility. That's what the district court found. That finding is certainly not clear error. Your Honors, unless there are any questions the government would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Counsel. How much time? 25 seconds.
The only thing I'd like to point out, Judge, is that with respect to Cole, Lovelace, and Brewer, those are the three that actually testified. It is not limited to their testimony in determining the quantity involved. There were 13 other witnesses who were just brought through the pre-sentence investigation. Those are untested. We're talking on the one hand that the judge can test the credibility. On the other hand, then, how can we then accept something that basically leaves it up to the probation officer test credibility. And for those reasons, we would be asking the court to reverse the district court's finding, especially since the downward departure is based upon the relevant conduct issue 2. We'd ask the court to reverse the downward